The call to order the Energy Utilities, Technology, and Communications Committee meeting for Tuesday, March 18th. We do have a quorum that has checked in, although not all of them have remained at this point. And apparently there is some work that needs to be done on Senate File 3758, so we will begin with Senate File 3698. Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senate File 3698 is a solar energy program wrapped around the SIP program we now have in statute. And it's an attempt to, as we've been talking about solar initiatives, to try to move a little bit more of our efforts into that area in different creative ways so that we can help to bring more players into that marketplace. And what this bill does is that in qualified solar projects, whether they be solar thermal projects or solar electric projects, I believe, that these projects could qualify for a part of the SIP program. What we're looking at specifically is that 0.5% on top of the 1.5% that the SIP program revolves around. And we know that the 1% will probably go more towards wind projects in general, but this would be specifically for that upper 0.5%. And I have Assistant Commissioner Mike Bull with me today to explain the program a little more in detail.
Before we do that, Senator Dahl, you have a delayed all amendment?
Oh, excuse me. Yes, I do, I believe.
And this is the first hearing for the bill, correct?
Yes, it is, Madam Chair. So I do have the A2 amendment.
Okay. Senator Dahl offers the A2 amendment, an author's amendment, to get the bill in the shape that he would prefer. All those in favor, please signify by stating aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails with one vote.
Madam Chair, and before we have Assistant Commissioner speak on this too, there is one other section that is in addition to the SIP program, and again, it's in terms of moving forward in this solar industry here in the state. Is in section 4 of my bill, helping move forward a solar rating and certification laboratory. And what we're looking to do there in conjunction with the Office of Energy Security is to develop some standards by which laboratories could test solar panels and products that are produced. And so that's section 4 of this. And I think Assistant Commissioner Bull could also address that as well.
Okay. Assistant Commissioner Bull.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Mike Bull with the Office of Energy Security. And I think Senator Dahl has described the bill very well, that what we were trying to do is figure out there's a lot of interest in working solar projects, both thermal and electric, into the Conservation Improvement Program. That interest also results in some concern from the conservation and energy efficiency advocates. And so we sat down and tried to work through some of these issues, and that's the language that you see here, that I think there's a general sense and consensus that the language that we have here both promotes solar energy within the Conservation Improvement Program, but does so in a way that preserves the integrity, maintains the integrity of that conservation, of the Conservation Improvement Program. And I think that there's a general consensus and support for this approach. On the last section, the new section dealing with the Solar Rating and Certification Laboratory, right now the solar thermal equipment generally has to be approved by a lab out of Florida, which has has a lab, an associated lab in Canada, and in order to be participating in a bunch of in federal incentives, state incentives, et cetera, they have to be certified. And that, with all the interest in solar installations, the work that's being done at those two labs is there's a pretty long backlog, and it's causing some dislocation within that industry, the solar equipment industry. And what we're looking to do is what do we need to do to develop a solar certification lab here in the state? And the idea would be to ask, just to sit down and ask folks, what are the, A, what are the criteria, and B, what's the interest level amongst our MNSCU folks, with the University of Minnesota. There's some private labs that might be interested in doing this, just to give us a sense of what it might cost to develop a certification lab in the state, and we'd come back with a report on that next session.
Madam Chair, if I might add,
Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Part of this, as the system commissioner was talking about, the two testing labs, located in Canada, it also then becomes under the regulations of NAFTA, which then add a lot of additional costs to work through that particular location, testing lab. And so this is a way to bring it back into the contiguous 48 states, and to set something up. It's mainly a directive to the office to help bring stakeholders together to develop some standards and then open this up so that, again, more players would step into this part of the industry and try to stimulate the free economy part of what we're trying to do here with the renewable energy standard.
Well, let me ask some questions. I'm not sure I fully understand. So you want to have a study group to identify what are the criteria for being able to measure the savings, is that it? And
well, Madam Chair, if I understand this correctly, and Assistant Commissioner might be able to add on to it, is that right now some of the standards that they look at are just BTUs, how well they work. The other things we want to look at are air quality and durability, other factors that we want to, establish a set of standards that the whoever would be doing this testing within the state or within this region would apply to. And that's just to be able to set those standards in place.
So, Assistant Commissioner Bull.
And Madam Chair, that's correct. And just to be clear, that the solar certification lab isn't necessarily tied to the conservation piece of it. It's we're looking at certifying what we can do to set up a certification laboratory for the actual equipment, the solar equipment, that it meets, that it's good, like an underwriter's laboratory for electronics, the UL certification. Right now, all solar thermal equipment has to have that kind of a certification done. It's mostly done out of a lab out in Florida, the SRCC. And what we're looking to do is seeing what we can, how we can move forward on developing a certification lab in Minnesota. We think that will be helpful in terms of developing the solar equipment industry in Minnesota.
I'm still not real clear. And so after you set up the standards, then are you going to be contracting with a particular laboratory, or will?
Madam Chair, not yet. I think the first step is when we're talking with the folks who are interested in doing this, is that we don't know what it would take to set up a certification lab. Who would be interested in the state in doing that? What it would cost? What kind of equipment they would need? And so we're setting up a technical stakeholder group to talk about development of an RFP, a request for proposals from people who might be interested in participating in providing setting up a solar certification lab. I'm thinking in particular there are renewable energy centers of excellence in our MNSCU system. Maybe there'd be some interest on the part of those folks to participate and tell us what it would cost, what level of interest, and we would come back to you next session and let you know what we found out. So we're not looking actually to set anything up yet. This is more information development.
You're saying that there already is a testing lab in Canada?
There's one in Canada and there's one in Florida. They're related.
Could you not just model those ours off after theirs?
To a large extent, Madam Chair, yes, we will. Although I think, as Senator Dahl pointed out, that the advocates who brought us this concern have also said that the couple of things that they're not testing for in Florida and the Canada lab, durability, cold weather operations, air quality as a result, that those should be included in a certification process as well.
So why do we need a law to do this?
Madam Chair, I think the
Assistant Commissioner Ball.
We can do it either way. I think that the preference directing us to do it is to raise the profile of it and to show that it's this is not just something that the Office of Energy Security is interested in helping with, but there's buy-in more broadly amongst policymakers.
Madam Chair.
Yes. Senator Rest.
Well, Senator Dahl, your new Section 4 makes this bill almost have to come to my committee, which you don't want.
Okay.
Almost.
What does almost mean, Senator Rest?
but that being said, and maybe I was signing these reports and didn't pay attention, but on line 312, did you make a correction in the report date?
Yes.
Not yet.
It should be January 15, 2009. And I may have to change my guidelines to include now the creation not only of advisory groups, commissions, workforce, or task forces, but now stakeholder groups. but right now, it doesn't include that. But if they're going to make recommendations, we want them to have draft legislation done before they come back to the legislature. So, Madam Chair, I would amend line 312 to correct the date to January 15, 2009, and then on line 315, before the period, insert including draft legislation.
So on Senator Rest's amendment to amend line 3.12, change the date 2008 to 2009. And on line 3.15, after recommendations before the period, including draft legislation.
Madam Chair, the reason for that is that we often get reports that make recommendations, and they just go and sit on a shelf someplace. If people are serious about what they're doing with these recommendations, then they ought to be suggesting to us how the statute should be changed.
Point well taken. Any further discussion on that amendment? Then all those in favor, please signify by stating aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. And again, the other part of this is up to 5% of the additional half percent of conservation can be used for solar? Is that by...
Madam
Assistant
Chair,
Commissioner Dahl.
Under current law, the underlying bill, as it was introduced, proposed a 10% carve out for SIP expenditures, for utilities conservation improvement plan expenditures for solar thermal. And so as we looked at this, we realized there is a current SIP carve out for up to 5% of those expenditures for renewable energy. And so what we've worked to do is to refocus to a large extent or put a bigger focus within that existing 5% carve out for these kinds of these solar technologies, and have provided for a mechanism if they meet certain cost effectiveness guidelines, etc., for a utility counting those toward their energy, not just their energy savings goals. They have both expenditure goals under conservation improvement, and they have energy savings goals under. And for a project, a conservation project to be useful to the utilities, it really has to count toward both. And so we've figured out the mechanisms to allow that to happen for these solar projects.
Why are we limiting it,
Madam Chair? The I think the limits are important in that, well, I can tell you that to the conservation advocates, the limits are important because we don't, we want to make sure to the extent that we can that the there remains a focus on what folks would consider pure conservation energy efficiency projects. We want to maintain the sort of the integrity of that portion of the program. But, Madam Chair, there may be benefits, you know, to expanding.
Okay.
Madam Chair, I think the
Senator
idea here
Bell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The idea here is to begin to, you know, in as we move forward with this renewable energy standard, you know, it's not going to be a single bullet that takes us there. It's going to be somewhat of a shotgun approach. Most of that's going to be focused on wind. But we want to be able to branch out a little bit into areas where we can provide some incentives. I think that all the utilities that I've talked to said that they think this is a good program. This gives them a little opportunity now to reach up into that little higher limit of that SIP program, and it also will help us to encourage more dollars to go into solar energy projects.
Okay. Any discussion? Okay, on the amendment then, Senator Jungbar? No?
I don't know. I just get so frustrated with the carve-out stuff. And
This is not on the renewable energy, though.
I know. It's but as we look at the solar and as we, you know, we're putting more things, it just seems like we're always kind of directing as opposed to, and even though, I'm sorry, Madam Chair and Senator Dahl, you did kind of talk about the shotgun approach a little bit, but I don't know, when I'm listening to the whole discussion, it just seems like we only bring the people to the table that happen to be handy, and there's a lot of other technologies out there that we need to encourage, and we hear about them occasionally in this committee. But, you know, as we look at what we're looking at today in terms of bills, it just seems that maybe our Office of Energy Security might in the future want to come to us and say, here's technologies that are being worked on around the country and around the world, and we'd like the committee to be thinking how they all play in and how we can encourage all of them. So I'm good with the testing labs and things, because the more we bring home to understand what we're dealing with, that's a good thing. But
Senator Jungbar, I think the difference, though, in this compared to other bills we've heard is that it doesn't require that a certain amount of solar be used. It allows that it may be used.
No, and it's a good point, Madam Chair, but the more we make the statement, solar and other things, it just seems like we're still kind of directing, I guess.
Well, I think
but I do like the idea that it's not a mandate.
There is an argument, though, for solar in that it is expensive technology at this point, and the more opportunities there are for us to get out information about it and to get more of it in use, then the likelihood that the price on it will drop.
Well, Madam Chair, and that is a good argument in theory. Solar has been around a long time and hasn't made it over that hurdle. And Senator Carlson and I were talking about the nanotechnology being able to maybe be the springboard for that. And we really haven't heard that discussion in this committee about the advances in nanotechnology in terms of solar. But again, it's still, and not this, I mean, we'll talk about it more on other stuff we're looking at today, but there is commercially viable products out there that we've really not looked at in Minnesota. And, you know, I always go back to hydrogen. We talk about it, we gloss over it, but there's commercially available products out there, and we just, they are viable, and I've really never heard that discussion in this committee yet. But I'm not talking against Senator Dahl. I'm just, it just seems like we're always focusing in, and I'd like to get away from the focus more.
Madam Chair and Senator
Jungbauer,
I'm waiting for that hydrogen bill, and I'll be sitting on that side of the table listening to you over here.
Any further discussion on Senate File 3698? Senator Dahl.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I move that Senate File 3698 as amended be recommended to pass and be referred to
the floor.
The floor.
On Senator Dahl's motion, any discussion? All those in favor, please signify by stating aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members.
Not a good bill.
Pardon?
Okay. Okay. Senator Rummel. And I would like to direct the committees. No.
Yes.
Okay. I would like to direct the committee's attention. There is a committee engrossment from our previous discussion and amendments that were adopted when we met last week. And that's identified as SCS 3528 UEI. One, rather, not I. One.
Madam Chair.
Senator Senjum.
Madam Chair, I may be getting ahead of you, but I'm looking at two amendments. Were they incorporated last time, or are they for today?
No, I think they're for today.
Okay.
So, Senator Rummel.
Thank you, Madam. Thank you, Madam Chair, members. I think I'd like to back up a little bit and tell you where my interest in solar began. In 1984, we were going to buy a new home because I was expecting my second child, and we had just gotten over the huge energy crises in the 70s, and I had become interested in energy-efficient housing. And when we went to look at houses, the ability to buy a house that was energy efficient was just, you'd have to buy a house and just actually redo the whole house. So we decided to build. And I took a course at the University of Minnesota in energy efficient housing. And so that's you know, a long time ago I started, that's 1984, by the way. I forget how many years, is that 24 years already? That I began this interest in how do we do things better. We built a house that was 2.5 times bigger than our original home, and we heated it for 30% less, and it was all passive solar. And that's where my belief in capturing the sun began, that we can do this and we can make this a better world. About a month ago, maybe a little bit more, I was invited to a local church to share with them what we did last year on our renewable energy standard, on the Next Generation Energy Act. And about 50 people were there, which surprised me at a church thing in the middle of the winter coming out. When I was finished, it was a pretty mild presentation. A number of people came down en masse and surrounded me, and they kept saying, "What about solar? What about solar?" And they handed me cards and they handed me things and saying, "We're interested in solar, solar electric, solar thermal." And that's where the idea for creating this bill came about. I'd like to talk about first the benefits of the bill. This is just to recapture what I've tried to do is, because we've had the 4 days in between, recapture the testimony we had last week. First of all, solar electric will add diversity to our renewable energy standard. It's like planting a small seed for the future. You know, 15 years ago, wind was very expensive. Today, it is our premier renewable energy. That's the near future low-hanging fruit. One time it was expensive, and now it's competitive on the market. down the road after 2025, we're going to need another large renewable energy source. And granted, today, solar electric is not that competitive. But if we begin to invest in it now, if we begin to attract the market here now, by 2025, when we need it to supplement our needs, we will be ready. We will be ready to take on the next generation of energy. I was talking to Mr. Bowl after our last meeting here, and he reminded me that we have three major energy sources here for Minnesota. The first is wind, that's renewable. The second is biomass, and the third is solar. And he said, you know, we did something for wind, we did something for biomass, but we've done very little, next to nothing, for solar. As a matter of fact, Minnesota is one of the few states that have actually no real solar strategy in place. Minnesota has a solar resource that is better than Houston, Texas. It's better than Jackson, Florida. It's better than Miami. We have a lot of solar potential. And the beauty of it is that it kicks in at a time when our utilities most need the supplement. On a hot summer day, when people with solar electric are using their power, their renewable power, I don't know if somebody... Katie, did you pass out those little handouts? Remember I said last time I went to one of the House and Senate joint committees, and there's a graph on here that shows that when solar is performing at its peak is exactly when our utilities need this peak performance. And so it's a really good energy source for us. Solar energy does not require transmission lines. And while the fuel from solar is free, the installation and maintenance is job intensive. So here we are in 2008, at a time when we do not have a whole lot of money, we're trying to figure out what to do with the deficit, and where we have also a shortage of jobs. We have the potential for introducing and encouraging a piece of technology that will not cost us a whole lot, but that will generate jobs. The second big benefit of this bill is that it expands community energy ownership of renewables. It fits the intent of the governor's bill. It will give solar electric a standing that it has not had in Minnesota. You know, we lost out on wind manufacturing. We dragged our feet and dragged our feet, and by the time we launched into wind manufacturing, the major companies that build those turbines did not locate in Minnesota. I would say let's not do that again. That's what this bill is about. Let's not miss the boat a second time. This bill responds to the interest on the part of the public to participate in reducing our carbon emissions. There's high interest in it, but we have low investment. Now, I would suggest this is also a modest bill. When I began, the bill was going to imitate or be patterned after what Colorado was doing. And I looked at some of the initial runs we were doing as we were preparing the bill, and I recalled the work we did last year with our utilities. And I thought, no, this would not be fair to our utilities to ask them to do 1 or 2%. So I self-imposed a much more modest solution. My question to myself was, how do we incentivize, how do we give a signal out there that solar electric is important without burdening our utilities, without burdening them heavily? This bill also has a 5-year limit. Doesn't go out forever. What the bill does is the equivalent of asking our utilities to create small pilots to learn how to ramp up to scale, which we will eventually need, a solar electric industry in this state. This bill will ensure that we have in place by 2020 another wonderful major renewable source. Again, solar is likely to contribute up to 50% of the renewable energy we need after 2025. And as I said before, jobs. In this economy, can we afford to pass up the opportunity? In the next 10 years, it's likely that solar energy, solar electric, will create as many as 5,000 jobs, as the friends from the Electric Labor Union told us last time. Right now, this bill will send a message that Minnesota is solar electric friendly. So it has a long-term goal, being able to be ready for that major input of solar. It has a midterm goal of creating up to 5,000 jobs, and it has a near-term goal. And that near-term goal is to send the signal that Minnesota is solar friendly. We currently have in place a way that people can get rebates for solar, but that expires in 2009. If we do not pass this bill, members, we will have no solar policy here in Minnesota for solar electric. Okay, so after the church meeting and looking at those numbers being so high, we started to listen to what needed to happen with the utilities. We met with a couple of the utilities earlier, and while they were not happy, I admit they were not happy with the idea of mandating using part of their RES for this, they did agree it was a very small incidental burden. The renewable energy standard requires 7,000 megawatts. This bill asks for 4 of those megawatts to be solar. In private, some of the utilities have admitted to me that this is doable. As I said, they don't like it, but the request is small. You know, sometimes we have to do things we don't like. Their biggest concern is that by doing this, we will set a precedent. We will set a precedent that every other technology in the world is going to come down the pike and say, we want a solar carve-out. Well, you know, I actually share their concern. I thought about this a great deal over the weekend. There is something unique about the solar electric that I don't think any of the other technologies will be able to claim. First of all, solar has the potential of rapidly becoming competitive if we have an incentive. Secondly, solar electric, because of the economies of scale that are involved, can drive down the costs, and we can bring it here at a low cost much faster than if we did nothing. But most importantly, when you look out 50 years from now, we expect that solar will provide that 50%, 30 to 50% of our renewable energy. The ability to scale up solar electric is a major strategy for our energy future. We need the experience to do that now. So the question is, do we want Minnesota to participate? Members of the committee, I would argue that this bill is good policy. This bill is about a jump start for a new industry. Again, Mr. Bull said that solar is one of Minnesota's 3 top renewable energy sources. And we helped out wind, we helped out biomass. Minnesota is behind in solar development. Half of the states have solar carve-outs that promote solar. Do we want to be left behind? The distributive requirement in this bill is very important. It ensures that the solar development is near where the electricity is being used. Now, I'd like to remind you that in this bill, there is no government money. This proposal has no government money. It lets the private sector and entrepreneurs, in collaboration with the utilities, work together to fulfill a very, very tiny obligation. I'm confident that the utilities will step up to the plate. and play an important part that we need them to play in securing America's energy independence. I have an A5 amendment that I wanted to offer at this point, if that's all right. Mr. Chair?
Yes, Senator Rummel. Do members have the A5 amendment in their packets? I believe it was in there. Yeah, okay. Is it an author's amendment?
And if it,
no. Okay.
If I can walk through the bill in some space, besides reducing the size of the bill and reducing the time of the bill and reducing the percent that we are requiring to be distributive. This is listening back and forth with the utilities. There seemed to be in our conversation last Friday an interest in having assurance that the utilities may count all the electricity generated, that it is in compliance with this paragraph toward their standard obligation. So that would be part of the amendment. And then on page 2, line 20, I don't have the right bill here, I'm sorry.
She's okay, isn't she? Yeah.
I don't have the latest engrossment. Do I?
UE1.
That's the one I have, only goes up to line 14. Thanks.
Mr. Chairman, I don't think any of us do, or I don't.
I think, members, we're working off, I believe it's a 3528 UE1, mm-hmm. correct? Maybe Mr. Fuller can help me. And then right now we're discussing the A5 amendment.
Thank you.
I don't know if it's not in your packet. Even get Senator Restman. It is.
So on page 2, line 20, because, again, it seemed like the discussion was working around whether or not what reasonable marketing efforts were required. So we are deleting that. Again, it's a small request of the utilities, and it gives them an opportunity to set in place almost like micropilots, a pattern for how they will eventually ramp up to a much greater participation in solar electric. Are there any questions?
Members have any questions on the A5 amendment?
Yeah.
Oh, Senator Rosen, I'm sorry.
And Senator Rummel, can you explain what standard obligation is on line 114?
Senator Rummel?
I'm sorry, I didn't find out where you...
Okay. Maybe counsel can help us out, too. Mr. Fuller?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Rosen, that's paragraphs A and B. They're in the bill. So that's the current obligation to achieve these percentages called a standard, and it's referred to as a term of art as a standard obligation. So if you look at page 1, line 15 of the bill, in 2025 for non-XL utilities, the obligation is 12%. That's the standard obligation. And all the rest are standard obligations, too, because it's called a renewable energy standard now, and the utilities are obliged to meet it.
Further discussion on the A5 amendment. Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. The A5 amendment is adopted.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Youngbauer.
As long as we're on amendments, I have the A6 amendment. Should be in everybody's packet.
A6 amendment to the amendment, Senator Youngbauer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Rummel, you made a lot of good arguments in terms of the solar, and so I thought, well, you know, as long as we were talking about a small carve-out on something that's already commercially viable and available, we always get into talking about alternative energy sources. In hydrogen, you can actually go online, buy a nice little hydrogen unit. You can actually hook up to your water supply at home and create hydrogen for your vehicle. So they're commercially available. You can go right out and buy them just like you can a lot of solar collectors. Members, another great source of hydrogen is every wastewater treatment plant in the state of Minnesota pools water. You could literally attach a hydrogen production unit on any one of those pools, and because it's wastewater treatment, you can actually, it converts water to hydrogen much more efficiently because it has trace minerals, salts that make the water easier to electrolyze into hydrogen. And so you could just put a nice little generator there on every wastewater treatment plant, convert into hydrogen. Now you can power your own treatment plant. And in point of fact, you actually solve multiple environmental problems by adding hydrogen in the mix, because we're not putting so much wastewater downstream. There's numerous wastewater treatment plants that actually, and wastewater treatment plants aren't as effective as members might think. On average, on the best days in Minnesota, we treat about 68% of the harmful contaminants and then release the rest of them into lakes, streams, and rivers. So the more of that water we could actually produce into hydrogen would be a good thing. And again, as Senator Rummel says, we're just asking for a very, very small amount. Further, if you took a building that you're looking at LEED certification, one of the biggest gaps in LEED certification today, members, is water efficiency. It gives you one of the biggest points in a LEED-certified building. If you'd merely contain some of the wastewater and convert it into hydrogen and convert that hydrogen back into power for the building, you would get a lot more points under your LEED certification. Wonder why the Great River Energy Building didn't look at these kind of conversions and this kind of water efficiency. And the greatest thing about hydrogen conversion, especially when you use a wastewater stream, is it's never affected by weather. Doesn't matter if the sun's shining, doesn't matter if the wind's blowing, you can constantly, as long as people are flushing, you can convert water to hydrogen. So I ask for members' support on this minute carve-out for hydrogen to promote the hydrogen industry in Minnesota. And I could have got some testifiers, but I thought members, as long as we're just talking about such a small amount on a commercially available thing, that we could try to convert some of the this little piece of the puzzle into hydrogen. So I ask for your support.
Senator Rummel.
Mr. Chair, thank you, Senator Jungbauer. As I understand it, hydrogen is not a renewable energy. Hydrogen is a carrier of energy, and that the governor has a plan. If Mr. Bull would like to talk about the plan. And I think that your amendment probably should wait until we have that plan in place.
Mr. Chair and Senator Rummel,
Senator Jungbauer.
Wouldn't be considered a renewable energy if you were taking clean water, but since we're in the process of recycling water and converting it in my proposal, I think it certainly would fit under parameters of renewable, and we're protecting other levels of the environment by using that recycled wastewater to convert the hydrogen.
Senator Rummel, I'm sorry.
Could I ask Mr. Bull to explain the plan?
Sure.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Mike Bull with the Office of Energy Security. There are a couple of things going on with regard to renewable hydrogen in the state. One is to clarify, renewable hydrogen, which is hydrogen that is generated from a renewable energy feedstock, would qualify under the current renewable energy standard if it were used to generate electricity. But the that said, the last session we were directed by the legislature to and funded to create a renewable hydrogen roadmap. And Senator Anderson's bill provided $750,000 for us to develop a renewable energy hydrogen roadmap, which we are actively engaged in doing, and provided another $3.2 million for renewable hydrogen demonstration projects. Some of that money is being proposed under the governor's supplemental budget to return to the general fund, but it would leave in something on the order of $1.1 million of general fund money and assessment authority for renewable hydrogen projects. So there is quite a bit of activity around renewable hydrogen.
Mr. Chair, I would suggest that this is an unfriendly amendment and hope that the committee will vote no.
friendly. I'm for taken aback.
For the Senator
heck no.
No, oh, I thought you said that.
No, I said I'm taken aback that it's considered unfriendly.
Senator Carlson.
Yes, I have a question, Senator Jungbauer, about what you're offering here. What's the process you're offering? Are you using energy to electrolyze hydrogen and then using hydrogen to generate electricity?
Senator Jungbauer.
Yes, Senator Carlson, you can use a minute amount of electricity to generate hydrogen, and it's a decreasing efficiency when you're using clean water. But when you're using a water that's laden with minerals and salts, it's very simple and very efficient to electrolyze as opposed to a lot of the cleaner water projects. Case in point would be, I believe it's either Greenland or Iceland uses seawater because of the heavy salts, and every time the tides roll in and fill a pool, they convert that seawater to hydrogen and run their city buses on it. But it is not effective to run any kind of clean water because it takes a lot more energy to electrolyze.
Senator Carlson.
So the process you're talking about is taking electricity to make hydrogen and then using that same hydrogen to make electricity. It seems like we have a couple extra steps.
Senator Jungbauer.
Well, there would be several other places, ways you could do it, especially if you did it in a wastewater treatment plant. As water is pumped through the plant, you could use miniature turbines to power the hydrogen processing plants.
Mr. Chair, I would suggest we're getting off the topic. That this bill is about solar electric, and we have a debate going on. The difference between the solar that I'm talking about is after this year, if we do not take some action for solar electric, we have no solar electric policy in Minnesota at all, whereas there is in place policy for hydrogen. So
I think, Mr. Chair and Senator Rummel, I can clarify that I guess the point I'm trying to make is if we carved out money under any viable energy alternative, we can get that market to flourish. And I don't think it's fair to carve it out on one side if we're not equally distributing to other ends that we're looking for in order to become energy independent.
Senator Rosen had a question.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you. Well, and that was exactly the point I was going to make that Senator Jungbauer made in a little bit different way, is that I think the controversy with this bill, as we all know, is that we are carving out solar. And I think there are some very good points to what Senator Rumble's saying, but we are going again down this part of carving out, and I think we have to be very careful about our commitment with utilities. So that's all I was going to say, and I was going to oppose this amendment.
And Mr. Chair, I will withdraw the amendment. I think I made my point, and I'll withdraw the amendment.
Thank you, Senator Jungbauer. Senator Dahl, to the
Mr.
Bill.
Chair, that then I've I don't need to speak then. I was going to speak to the amendment, but okay. Now that he's withdrawn it, I'm okay.
Further discussion on Senator Rummel's Senate File 3528. Senator Carlson.
Mr. Chair and Senator Rummel, I think that a solar objective is a very good idea. The problem I have with solar projects is that solar PV has been around for a long, long time. And it's very effective in small pieces like light-activated calculators, you have some kinds of equipment that's a long way from a power source, things like that. But it's all very expensive, and it's all very hobbyist-oriented. And I think that if we were to have something that's effective here for the future, it really needs to be something that is more towards the research end of things and also takes advantage of economies of scale. And I know we spoke about it a little bit, that the on-site generation of power is a good thing, and the on-site use of it so that you don't need transmission is a good thing. But and in fact, I think it's shown in one of your handouts here, is there's the schematic of the photovoltaic panel and then the inverter and then using it in the home and then the utility meter. And I dare say that an awful lot of these projects would never, ever pay off because the amount of power that can be generated from a photovoltaic is really quite small versus the money that is put into it. And, for example, I would use the science house that the Science Museum has down there. It works. It puts power into the grid. But even that house is not it doesn't meet what I would say it should meet because it pulls in power in the off time equal to the amount of power that it would use anyway. It doesn't store. So what you have to have is a base that's just the same size as if it didn't have any photovoltaics on it at all. So I think what we need to do is I would like to see us do something with the power companies where maybe perhaps we use some of the maybe SIP, something like that, that where power companies can actually do some research on it or universities can do some research on it in a grand scale, a large scale, something where you have the economies of scale with the inverters and the installation.
Do you mind if I ask
Mr. Nelson?
Mr. Nelson.
Like to respond to that?
Carl Nelson with Green Institute. Mr. Chair, Senator, just to respond to a couple of your points, the intent of this bill is not to create worldwide demand for solar that would drive down the cost. That's already happening. The solar industry, the number of panels produced is increasing at about 35% a year. Every 3 years, production is doubling, and that is resulting in a steady decrease in costs, about 4% per year decrease in costs. It is inevitable that solar will be cost-effective at some point. There are various estimates about when that point will occur. Some optimistic people think 5 years. The Department of Energy estimates about 10 years. Others think it might be more like 20 years before solar electric is cost-effective. But no one disagrees that we will reach that point. It is true that the solar panels at the Science House are not cost-effective now. What this bill is trying to do is not move the entire market. We're trying to develop a small kernel of an industry so that in 5 years or 10 years, that point where it is cost-effective and can compete with wind, that we are ready for that point. That is the simple intent of this bill, and that's why it is so modest. Research is going on and appropriately being done at the federal level, and we could probably do some more of that at the state as well. But the intent of this is to be ready for when solar is cost effective and try to do a small, modest amount so we can be ready for that point.
Senator Carlson.
Mr. Chair and
Mr. Nelson.
Yeah, Mr. Nelson. I guess I would differ with you somewhat in that it's already cost effective. In a lot of places, it's already cost effective. It was cost effective on the little solar calculators. It's cost effective. You could go around the town here and you'll see sometimes road signs that are solar powered. That's cost effective. That already is in the market. And in fact, out west, there are a lot of places where power is just not feasible to bring in a power line. That's where it's cost effective. And that already is bringing down the price. And what I'm trying to drive at here is that I don't think that a mandate of a certain percentage of power being supplied to the grid will encourage that or discourage it. I think it'll be almost neutral. You won't even notice it because, for the most part, the kind of solar energy or PVs that you're going to find on houses are going to be hobbyist level. They're not going to be major level. They're not going to be a $100,000 investment or a $500,000 investment. And that's what we need to get the prices down, like the solar house where the entire roof is a solar panel.
Senator Chair and Senator Carlson, this isn't just for houses. This is for example, along the Central Corridor. Those businesses are already planning the St. Paul plan for the Central Corridor is to have solar electric on the roofs of those buildings. Minneapolis has a very aggressive plan to incorporate solar electric in their cities. So it's not a hobbyist level. And as we said before, you know, we need to get ready for 2025 and beyond. We need to start to grow that industry here. And I would argue with you, members, that we blew it with wind industry. We just blew it. We let it go by, and we let it locate in Iowa. And if we don't send a signal here, if we let this expire, if we have nothing on the books in Minnesota, shame on us. Shame on us. 5,000 jobs.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think this is a good idea. I think it's very small. It's very modest. Very, very small. And so that gives me some comfort. And I think to Senator Rummel's point, you know, we can look to Germany and some other places that have less sun than we do, and they've got, you know, they're just leaving ahead of us on the use of distributed generation, on-site generation, and so we know what's possible by looking to that example. I wonder, question for Senator Rummel, and I guess for Senator Carlson too, if there would be some way, I don't know if it would be in this bill or somewhere else, where we set a date by which we figure out some mechanism to take a look at, you know, have the goals that we're trying to achieve been realized. And I don't know if you're open. I don't have.
We have limited the bill to 2012, Senator Dibble. I would hope by then that we have enough information to give us some sense of whether this was in fact as good an idea as I believe it is, and I do believe it's a good idea. Mm-hmm. And it's extreme. Again, folks, it's extremely modest. Mm-hmm. It's like little micro pilots that the utilities, whether it's Xcel or Minnesota Power, and they can learn about what is the best way for them to incorporate this into their future energy package.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So Senator Rummel, you're saying our definition of success is that by 2012,
it's not a definition of success. It's just a limit to the bill to get it. It's an incentive to get it started here. I'm not saying it's going to define success, but by 2012, okay, we should have a good idea.
Senator Dibble.
Please, Senator Rummel, let me finish my
question. I'm sorry.
But I hear, you know, I hear a lot of goals articulated for the bill. I'm just trying to help, you know, because I'm supporting this. So, you know, I hear a lot of goals articulated, and so I'm wondering if there would be an opportunity to stop and take a look back at 2012 or beyond 2012. I mean, the way I read the bill, by 2012, 0.0125% of the electricity would be generated as part of the standard. And so I guess my question is, you know, I didn't understand that to be the sole goal. Is that? I think the larger goal is a lot more being used, being generated by solar, and that being more cost effective than it is today. That we have manufacturers, we have a lot of research going, a lot of jobs that have been created, that sort of thing. So that's what I'm thinking would be.
So are you suggesting we add something to the bill?
Perhaps.
A study or a...
Perhaps, or you know, a look back, you know, an evaluation of some sort. Might give some more members some comfort.
A reconsideration.
That the goals that you've articulated, which I think are laudable, and I think will be realized, but that we have some idea that there's going to be an opportunity to take a look at that, so that the sole goal is not just the generation of 0.0125% of electricity as part of the renewable energy standard. That we've got an industry that's being sparked, and a cost effectiveness measure that's becoming more in line with other sources of electrical generation, et cetera.
Senator Anderson, then Senator Senjum. Senator Anderson.
Are you on this point? Are you going to respond to Senator Dibble?
No.
Okay, sorry.
Senator Anderson.
Don't mean to usurp your authority, Mr. Chair. I wasn't going to respond directly to Senator Dibble. I think that's a good idea to have an evaluation. And this has been helpful. I apologize I wasn't here last week when you first presented the bill, and so this has been helpful for me to get a better sense of what the goals are that you're trying to accomplish and the narrow approach that you have. And I have to admit I'm a little possessive of this law, the RES law, but I really support this bill, and I think the reason it's important, I was glad to hear your testimony from Mr. Nelson, that this is very small, and this is not going to affect the worldwide market for solar. This is going to affect the presence of solar in Minnesota, and that's the purpose. I think that's your purpose, is to really establish a real presence for solar in Minnesota, and hopefully to try to develop the industry or begin to at least attract some attention that, hey, you know, United States, we're interested in solar development in this state too, because we haven't really done that before. The solar rebate that you mentioned, Senator Rummel, we funded that in my budget last year, I think $500,000, and it was gone. That money was gone in 6 weeks? Mr. Bull's nodding. It's a really short time. Senator Rosen has a great bill that we heard today, the governor's initiative on helping people put solar and other distributed renewables. We heard that in this committee earlier. You know, putting those projects out on the ground. There is so much interest in this around the state, and there's just not that many opportunities for people who are interested in solar to get into the market. So I think this is a really small piece. I understand the utilities are reluctant to add. This doesn't add to their standard, but to tell them exactly how to accomplish it. I understand that, but I think it's so small and targeted that it really wouldn't create any kind of a burden. I just was rereading the law, and to see that Xcel is already required, they already have a 5% carve-out of non-wind. That's the only carve-out they have remaining in the law. So they already have to be doing a significant amount of renewables under the existing law that's not wind. That's a heck of a lot more than this bill would do. And so I think I've heard Xcel say they'll certainly be doing this amount anyway, and I would guess maybe some of the other utilities are too, but it sends that signal out there that we're interested. And we have a lot of other bills that we're talking about this session about how to not miss the boat on the jobs, on the job creation, how to really bring home those jobs to Minnesota in wind and other energy efficiency areas that we've really focused on. And I think this would be a market signal that would help us bring the development of those jobs in solar to Minnesota. So I think it's really small, it's really targeted, and it's only for, 4 years? So I hope members would consider supporting the bill, because I think it'll have a big impact for the small amount of a requirement that it is.
And I certainly would entertain coming back for doing some kind of evaluation when that time is up to see what we learned. I think that would be quite appropriate.
Can you help me explain a little bit where those 5,000 jobs would come from?
Well, solar electric is a labor-intensive business. First, if we attract manufacturers, you'll have some jobs coming from there. Where the bill requires distributed solar electric, so it's on different buildings in different places in different communities. And so in those communities, you will have people that need to maintain and service and install those solar electric units. And over time, those jobs could be a lot more than 5,000.
Senjum? Senator Senjum, I'm sorry.
Right, I kind of like this. Mr. Chair.
Just chair.
Senator Sparks and Senator Rummel, could you just go over to lines 2-9 and 2-10 for me? And as I read those, I'm particularly interested in, and I might even want to follow through that paragraph because I'm not sure I completely understand it, but at least for starters, 2-9 and 2-10, where it talks about, you know, by the year 2012, at least so much percent of the electricity required be generated by each electric utility. And so I get to that electric utility, and I remember vividly a magazine I used to get, and I think it maybe came from the municipal utilities, and it would list all these little utilities all over Minnesota. And I remember, as example, Lanesboro, they got a little power dam down there on the Root River, and they generate just a little bit. And I think Spring Valley, for instance, another utility, it is a utility. I think they buy their electricity and then redistribute it within the city. And so we have all these, I'm not sure if it's hundreds, but we have many, many of these electrical utilities around Minnesota that I would suspect would fall into the definition of each electric utility. And so we asking Lanesboro and Spring Valley and all of these smaller utilities to comply with this?
Mr. Fuller, can you explain that?
Mr. Fuller.
Language.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair, Senator Remo, Senator Senjum, I don't have the statute we might give over, but I know with respect to under the Renewable Energy Standard Law, that was something that was thought about, and so that the smaller distribution co-ops, their parent wholesaler can do those projects, and then that can be allocated out to the smaller cooperatives. Is it the munis too? And the munis as well. So their parent wholesaler can do the required renewable standard effort, and it can be allocated out then to their retail distribution utilities or their wholesale utilities that they wholesale to. So that's how it's accounted for in the current law, and then this would pick that up because it's part of the current law. It just carves out something.
Mr. Chair, as we go further, and I just have a couple more questions, but as we go further into this, if any of the people in the audience have views to the contrary on that, I'd like to hear that because I think it's an important point. Senator Rummel, as you continue then through the paragraph, it seems to suggest at least 60% of the required solar is going to come from customer sites, and is that you know, the solar on the roof that we all see at somebody's house that's less than 100 kilowatts?
Senator Rummel or Mr.
Nelson? Domestic as well as small businesses.
Senator Rummel. Is that then to mean that we're requiring the electrical utility to generate solar, but we're asking the electrical utility through the customer sites to actually implement it? Does that basically mean that a utility would provide a grant to a business or a home to put up solar? Is that what the language is telling me?
Senator Rummel.
Mr. Chair, if I could defer to Mr. Nelson.
Mr. Nelson.
Chair, Senator, the method of how to comply with this is up to the utility. However, if I might give the example of how Colorado has complied with their requirement, they have a much larger requirement, and they have a multi-tiered approach. For Xcel Energy in Colorado, Xcel's a subsidiary in Colorado, they have a multi-tiered approach. The customer-owned side of that, they give a rebate, a standard rebate, that is a customer offering. So any customer could choose to participate and get a rebate, and then they would that would be used to comply with this requirement here. So from the customer side, it's very easy to participate in this program. But the utility can choose. I mean, we're not saying it has to be a rebate program. The utility could choose a different path. For example, they could do an RFP. Maybe they wanted to send an RFP to all the businesses in Minnesota and say, you know, how much would we have to pay you to put up solar on your business? And they've done that in Colorado as well.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, and then
Senator
one last
Sundin,
one.
You're okay.
Senator Romo, could you take a look at that? I think I know what it says, but that line 217 to 220, could you just tell me essentially what that means? That it seems to suggest that if it all falls apart and it doesn't work, that the utility has an alternative. Is that right?
I'm going to have to ask Mr. Fuller to explain that because he wrote the language.
Okay. Chief Counsel. I'm just trying to get an interpretation on 217 through 220, suggesting to me at least it says if somehow this doesn't work, that the utility has an option.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Senator Senjum. Now, that was amended, as you recall, on line 220. The last four words were
right.
Deleted.
Yes.
And so the intent of that, I believe, is that if, in fact, there aren't sufficient customers to meet the 60% customer site, customer-owned facility, the utility can do it in other than that manner, meaning I think that they have all their options available to them as to how this would be generated.
Thank you.
Senator Koch, then Senator Anderson.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Rimmel. I guess the issue that I have with this bill, and while I take to Senator Anderson's point that this is small and well honed, I think that, first of all, and I'll spare everyone the slippery slope argument, but we just almost can't help ourselves when we start putting our fingers in legislation and start telling people how to do it. We have outlined a very aggressive standard with the Renewable Energy Standard, and I hope that this is going to spur on many more technologies that maybe we can't even conceive of at this point, and I know that this is for a few years, but I would hate to see us focus on any one technology. My REAs, I had REAs in today, and they spoke about, they're very concerned about how they're going to meet the standard at all. Frankly, in my area, we don't have a lot of wind. They put up a wind turbine at my REA beginning of December, and only 5 days has it made enough wind to power a single house. So, you know, they have some concerns about how we're going to meet the standard, and then within that standard, we're going to start prescribing other things that they are required to do. And I guess that's where I have a problem. I'd hate to see us, you know, sort of choose one technology over another. I hate to see us sort of going down that slope. Even though it is small and targeted, I don't think we ever stop with small and targeted here. And so that's why I would tend to oppose this legislation.
Senator Anderson or Senator Rosen? Senator Anderson.
Thank
first.
You, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to ask two things. One is about what the Colorado law says, what percent that is, how much utilities have to do in Colorado.
Mr. Nelson.
Like Xcel, for example.
Mr. Chair, Senator, in Colorado, they have to do 4% of the of their total RES, and that comes out to about 1% of total electric sales. So in Minnesota, that would be approximately 300-some megawatts. And by 2010, they have to do 56 megawatts.
Okay, Mr. Chair, and this is 4 megawatts statewide, right? So this is like 2 wind turbines statewide. So it's just so small. I wish it was more. And I guess thinking about what Senator Senjum said, I mean, if you sort of break that down into all the different small munis and co-ops around the state, you know, for each, if you divided it among all of them, even though I know it's at the wholesale level that the requirement would kick in, how much, you know, for your average small muni and your average small town in Minnesota, you know, is that going to mean one house is going to have solar panels or one business, or is it a lot more than that or a lot less than that? Can you estimate that, or is that too hard to estimate?
Mr. Nelson?
Mr. Chair, Senator Anderson.
Take a wild guess.
You know, if I had to guess, I would say, you know, that might be right. We might be talking about one solar panel in, you know, a town, the size, a small town, 5,000 population, something like that. One solar panel.
So, Mr. Chair, I mean, around the state, 4 megawatts is how many? Sort of divide that up among how many homes would it take to get to that? Can you,
Mr. Nelson?
Mr. Chair, Senator, I would imagine that it's not all going to be houses. Some of it will be larger at businesses, and a house might an average size might be 5 kilowatts. So if somebody's better at doing math in their head than myself, you know, that'd be 0.05 megawatts. So 3 decimal places over. You know, maybe Mr. Fuller, I see his where it's 1,000. We have the engineer in my whispering, but yeah, we're talking maybe about 1,000 homes.
1,000 homes, Mr. Chair. Instead of, I mean, California is doing 1 million solar roofs. We might do 1,000 solar roofs. So it's Now, I know you mentioned Minneapolis. They're already installing this parking lot project, which is a lot more than that. I mean, it's a lot more than one house would be. I don't know how many kilowatts that would be, and I don't know how many would be on the Central Corridor, but some of those projects would be many, many times the one house amount. So
correct.
I guess, I don't know. I think it's small. It would just to make sure that everybody at least tries one solar project. Across Minnesota. That's my strongest case to make to you, Senator Koch. I mean, I hear what you're saying. But I do also believe, honestly, I mean, in all seriousness, I think solar is, we've done a lot to promote wind in Minnesota, and I think solar is the next big renewable that we have not really tapped into, and I'd like to see people take it seriously, and this will make them take it seriously, but not put undue burdens on them.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Rummel, I want to first thank you for, I understand now your passion towards solar, and it's very admirable, and I really appreciate your work on this, because it sounds like you have been working very hard on this and working with a lot of different interest groups on this. But I should mention to Senator Anderson especially that, you know, we passed our big standard last year, and it was a big success. But I can remember, it was my impression, and don't take this to the bank, but what, talking to my caucus members, saying, this is what we're going to do. We're going to just stay put for a while. No more aggressive approach. So if you just hang in here with this renewable standard, you know, we're done. We're done for a while. And now all of a sudden we come back this year, and we're carving out just a little piece. And I know it's just little. And I concur with Senator Koch's words, too, is that it's just little. But, again, it's that impression. And it's that signal that we're sending out that maybe it's little, but still not necessarily that we're going back on our words, but that we're changing the rules and we're changing it all over again. So what's next? And that's what I worry about. And I am all for solar. I'm all for all these renewables. Rah-rah on all this. However, we need more help when it comes to the job area also, and I think we need to get DEED involved in it, and we need to go out and market. Just like Iowa did. They had a very aggressive marketing campaign, and I think Senator Anderson mentioned that in one of your bills. And that's where we need to focus our attention, is utilizing all the resources to move this energy. But members, there's a lot of us around this table that have to live next door to the guys that run our munis and our co-ops, and we're going out to eat with them down in our district, and they're having serious heartburn over this push and this initiative, because they're not sure what's next and where the rules are going to change. And so even though I really appreciate this this passion that you have, Senator Rummel, and it's obvious that you just love this. You're living in it. I just cannot agree with this approach until we have time to let everything settle a little bit and let everybody have a comfort level with the direction.
Senator Anderson and Senator Dahlin, we're getting close to a vote.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Rosen, I respect your views on this very much, and I understand that for you and members of your caucus, as you said, you know, we put a big stretch goal out there for the utilities, and I understand that. But I also would say that, we can't just rest on our laurels. And I think if I ever gave that impression, I apologize, because I don't think that's not what I believe. I mean, I think that's why we've been still talking about the big job that we have to reduce global warming emissions. It's going to take action. It's going to take efforts far beyond what we've already done. And it's going to, I think Senator Prettner-Solon says this often, and I totally agree with her, that we have to get beyond the electricity sector to get to a lot of those goals. But I'm not finding that, we're not making much progress in those areas. We have a lot more work to do to really get the job done. And so I just want to say, philosophically, I think that's important to remember, that we have a lot more progress to make as a state, as a nation, as a world in changing our energy policy. So I know it's hard to make these big changes, but we have to keep looking forward.
Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Rummel, thank you for bringing the bill forward. And I agree with Senator Anderson that we need to keep moving forward. It's like, if we won the Super Bowl last year, that's great, but that doesn't mean we now put our cleats away and say we don't need to do anything this year. We need to keep moving forward in a reasonable manner. I think this is a reasonable approach. I do have some questions, though, on this revised bill that you did, this amendment. We talk about 1,000 homes and that, could, as a number we'll work with. And have to put solar panels up to meet this objective. And if we're going with all utilities that have generate electricity have to apply to this point, 0.1%, I know that the larger ones are going to be able to meet that fairly easily, but the smaller ones are not. How is this going to apply? I mean, if we got 1,000 as our number, and, that means we spread it across the state. Xcel has to meet the same number as, an example, as one of the smaller utilities out there. It's going to be a lot more difficult for those smaller utilities to meet this standard. How is that addressed here?
Senator Rummel.
I think that was answered in terms of the pass-through, that at the wholesale level is where I think these people can explain it better than I can, or
yeah, because I don't understand that at this point.
Mr. Nelson?
Mr. Chair, maybe Mr. Fuller could. the general idea is that the individual utilities, and this is how the RES works, is that the obligation can pass through to the entities from which they get their purchase their electricity from. So the individual utility, they don't generate their own power. They can go back to the entity that does generate that power, and then they can spread it out amongst all of their customers that they serve. That's my understanding.
Mr. Fuller?
Mr. Chair, could Mr. Fuller give an explanation as well?
I didn't hear what he said because I'm deaf in my left ear, Mr. Chair. But as I said before, there's two things to think about with respect to smaller utilities. One is the fact that their parent wholesaler, if they do 2 megawatts, they can allocate that out as between their distribution utilities that they serve, that they provide power to. So that's what we had talked about previously. And, of course, the other thing, which is these utilities have to file reports periodically, and they can say whether or not they're do it or not. And there are the off ramps. Now that means, so this doesn't, if that aspect of the standard proves impossible, they would have that opportunity as well to say, here's why we can't do it, and they could be excused or delayed from that obligation. So there are two sort of safety nets that I can think of with
and
respect
Mr.
to
Mr. Chair, and one last follow-up then is I read that here that, you know, if you don't meet you can do more than 40% if you can't meet the minimum on a timely basis. When is that time? When do you decide? Is that the a month before the deadline, or is there some target date that says by 2010, or how do you determine that?
Mr. Nelson or Rummel?
That's almost purposely vague to give them another way out. We would like them to do it by 2012, but if that can't happen, it can't happen. What this bill assumes, we've modified the language significantly over and over again, is the goodwill and integrity of our utilities. And if this is a problem, they'll let us know, and that's fine.
Follow up then, Senator Rummel, if next year a smaller utility comes forward and says there's just absolutely no way we can do this.
They've got 5 years, okay. So I don't think they'll come back
next
year.
Well, in 2010 they come forward. They got 2 years left, and they haven't even achieved close to what they need to. Then they could come to the legislature, is what you're saying?
They
come
don't
to
even
us?
Have to do that.
Okay.
They go to the PUC.
All right, thank you.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I did come up with some language.
Thank you.
So I've shown it to Senator Rummel. So maybe it'll be so great that everyone will vote for this. It's to my earlier comments about providing some ability to reflect and look back and to see if this policy has had the intended beneficial effects, the goals that Senator Rummel has articulated over a more cost-effective utilization of the solar energy in the generation of energy and electricity, and sparking some manufacturing and some service, some installation industry here in Minnesota. So I'll read my proposed language, see what people think. By January 15th, 2015, the Commissioner of Commerce will evaluate and report to the legislative committees with jurisdiction over energy and to the Public Utilities Commission whether this paragraph has assisted in more cost-effective use of energy and the growth of solar energy manufacturing, installation, and service industries in Minnesota. Council, is that Senator Rest? Does that stand up to
come to your committee, Senator Rest?
No.
Senator Dibble, why did you put in 2015, just out of curiosity?
Mr. Chair, The bill's deadline, if you will, is by 2012, and then it gives it a couple more years to see if some of the other larger goals are starting to be realized. That's just 8 years from now. So.
Discussion on the Dibble
Seven
amendment.
Years, excuse me.
Senator Rummel?
I have no objection.
Council might have a suggestion. You want to change that or not? Further discussion on the Dibble oral amendment.
It would go in, I think, Mr. Chair.
It goes on page 2, line 20 after the period.
At the end of, after the period on line 20.
Yeah.
Okay.
Further. Page 2.
On page 2.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, when you have time.
Senator Senjum, I'm sorry.
It all sounds well and good. I'm sitting here thinking about, 2015, and I'm thinking that, I don't know whether it's peak oil or we all know probably in 2015 energy is going to cost more, and people are going to perhaps be compelled just by the markets and the cost to look for personal options. And in some cases, that may be the individual putting a solar panel on their roof. And so I'm sitting here thinking now we're asking the Department of Commerce to try to evaluate what new solar was a result of this policy versus what was the what new solar was, frankly, the prompted by the markets and the costs and so on. So I'm sitting here thinking, aren't we just putting the Department of Commerce to another effort that in the end isn't going to mean a whole lot to the legislature in 2015 anyway, and government's got enough to do.
Any cost?
Speaking for myself.
Further discussion on Senator Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, and in committee, I guess I could say I need to make sure that I'm clear in my tendency to not favor this, either the amendment or the bill. Solar PV has been around for a long, long, long time, and it has been slowly improving over many years. And 25 years ago, I was in a project at 3M to look at printing solar PV acreage, we called it. And, you know, that slowly has happened, and I think even the science house down there, it does have their solar panels are delivered on a roll. So they are somewhat printed, I guess you could say. But I think there's a lot of technology there that really needs to be developed yet, and I don't know that, you know, I think distributed installations also cause distributed intelligence, distributed experimentation, and it doesn't really come back together again. And I'm not opposed to solar PV, but what I'd like to say, in fact, you know, the 4 megawatts that we're talking about, I think it probably should be 1,000. But it should be done at the right way, in the right place, and with the right people and the right background. 4 megawatts is, you know, there are 5 megawatt turbines being installed in Europe right now. That takes care of it in one swoop. And turbines are very low maintenance, very easy to get, very easy to put in. And they actually are renewable. Now, I think solar energy, you know, solar PV again, not solar heat. Solar PV is going to come on its own, and I think there's a lot of technology that still needs to be developed, and probably, you know, I don't know that a mandate is the way to do it. I tend to think that we need to have this kind of driven by the technology, driven by the universities, driven by large installations. Driven by, and like Senator Senjum says, the market, I think, will produce some of this. And perhaps if there's some encouragements needed, maybe some credits need to be put together. But I don't really like the idea of a distributed mandate where it might be smaller installations that that the objective here is to create a number that you add up a number, and then that's the measure of success, as opposed to getting the price down, getting the installations in, getting the technology developed. That's what we really should have, develop the technology. So that's where I'm coming from, and I have a lot of problem with the way that we're doing it with this bill. So that's one of the reasons why I really can't support Senator Dibble's amendment, even though I kind of like the idea of having a feedback. I'm not sure where we're all going to be in 2015.
Good point. Senator Dibble.
Well, Mr. Chair, I withdraw my amendment, A. But, B, I just want to say to Senator Carlson, I think you misunderstand how technology and how innovation, particularly in this area, really occurs. When a market understands the predictability of a particular environment, when a regulated industry knows, has a predictable framework in which it's operating around something. Now, I know that Senator Rosen says predictable. What are you talking about? But I'm talking about
except for when we're in session.
Confined to, you know, this issue solely. You know, we had the same discussion, for example, around the Mercury Belt. And it's clear that the technology was almost there. But it wasn't going to quite get there and be made commercially available until the industry and the market understood that we were going to establish a very clear, bright line, an established mandate about, you know, what our expectation was around the emission of mercury. That's what will drive the ability of the commercial market, the technology, to get to a place where the utilities could then take advantage of and make access and use of that technology. And that's our role, particularly in this area, of establishing public policy. Solar is getting there. It's almost there. but it needs a predictable environment, framework, resources to kind of tip it over and get it to the place where Senator Rummel is articulating. But I withdraw the amendment, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. I have Senator Sharon, Rosen, and Koch, and we do have one more bill, so you should start.
Okay.
Senator
Thank
Sharon.
You. Thank you, Chair. Senator Rummel, would you please go through this concept that each parent utility can distribute to the smaller municipalities again? I'm just trying to understand how that would look. So if you have a company called Parent Energy, and they have four municipalities underneath them or smaller cooperatives, would each of those smaller cooperatives have to come up with 0.0125? Or is it the parent company that has to do that and then distributes that credit? So that the parent company ends up then not only with their 0.0125, but an accumulative 0.0125 for each of those smaller utilities.
Again, I think that's something that is part of the current RES, and the best explanation I always get is from Mr. Fuller on this one, how that works. It's already the way the RES works.
Fuller, do you have it?
Mr. Chairman,
I just want to say I ask this because it is the smaller utilities that are contacting a lot of us about their concerns.
I'll read you the language. So it's in 216B1691, subdivision 2A and B, which I think is in the bill, actually, except as provided in paragraph B, which is XL. Each electric utility shall generate or procure sufficient electricity generated by an eligible energy technology to provide its retail customers in Minnesota or the retail customers of a distribution utility to which the electric utility provides wholesale electric service. GRE, which has members, they can satisfy the standard for those member utilities to whom they provide wholesale power to, and that would be how it worked. I'm not sure how the acts. I'm just not familiar with how the mechanics work. Whether they can allocate it, whether there's some absolute allocation depending on the size of their smaller utility. I don't know the answer to that. If you're asking, but I don't know. So I don't know the answer as to how that allocation works. I know the intent was that they could satisfy the whole obligation, that the wholesaling parent can satisfy the entire obligation of the retail utility.
Sir, Sharon.
Just to follow up, I understood that part, that they could do that mm-hmm. by their actions, right. Satisfy the obligations of the smaller utilities. But does that then mean that they have a higher obligation than a single utility would have?
Fuller?
Mr. Chairman, no.
No?
Mm-hmm. Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think this has been a very worthy debate, and I think and I understand, Senator Dibble, your argument with the Mercury bill. I understand that. I wish we were moving towards encouraging solar in other ways and encouraging all entities to get involved in this marketing it and have it market-driven. But with that, Mr. Chair, I guess I'd like to ask for a roll call, too.
Okay. Senator Koch.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, all I would like to say is it's really not about hanging up our cleats. It's not about resting on our laurels. But it is about allowing the coach at draft time to choose the team that works best for him. And it's about allowing for some success in the renewable energy standard before we start, for lack of a better word, changing up the rules. We need to, if solar works, and we don't have any wind, Senator Rummel, but we've got 363 days of sun out in my area, seems like anyway. But so maybe that is the best answer for us. But it is, we shouldn't be prescribing within the standard how they reach that goal. And so that's where my problem with this bill is.
Senator
Rummel.
Again, if we do not pass something like this, This is a very small bill. This bill came down from a very large idea to accommodate and to be very sensitive to the utilities, and I really appreciate the work they've done and the conversations we've had. I've learned a great deal from them. But without this, Minnesota has no solar electric thing on the books, nothing. And if we are going to, again, capture future jobs, if we are going to signal to the industry that this is a solar-friendly state, then I think that we need to do something. And this is the smallest, least painful thing that we could come up with. On the one hand, we quadruple the size of the solar electric in this state, which is significant. And on the other hand, we make a very tiny request of our utilities. And again, in private conversations, many of them have said to me, this is doable. I think this is important policy for us.
Senator Senjum.
Mr. Chair and Senator Rumble, we may not carry that label, but it seems to me, and I'll go back to the Jobs Z bill, seems to me if a solar company wanted to come to Minnesota and set up shop, if they did it in the right place, there's a lot of area out there in greater Minnesota that could happen, that there would be some jobs availability. And that would be, you know, a fairly substantial incentive, I think. So I'm not sure we have to maybe characterize ourselves as a state not willing to incent job creation and new businesses by virtue of the fact that we don't say solar in our statute.
Senator Rummel.
I just respectfully disagree.
All right. A roll call has been requested. Senator Rummel moves that Senate File 3528 as amended be recommended to pass. On that motion.
Senator Anderson?
Yes.
Senator Carlson?
No.
Senator Dahl?
Yes.
Yes. Senator Dibble?
Yes.
Senator Dahl?
Yes.
Senator Jungbauer?
No.
Senator Koch?
No.
Senator Olsen?
No.
Senator Rest?
Yes, of course.
Senator Rosen?
No.
Senator Rummel?
Yes.
Senator Senjum?
No.
Senator Sharon?
Yes.
Senator Vandeveer? Senator Sparks?
No. On a 7-7 vote, the motion does not prevail.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Senator Dahl.
Chair.
Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Hopefully this one will have a little less discussion anyway. We can move forward. And this bill is in regards to some of the, with the renewable energy standard and the like, and the need to develop more.
Senator Dahl, do you have an amendment that you'd
like? Yes, we do. We have a delete all amendment I'd like to offer. And it's A6.
Do you want to make that? And Senator Dahl, before you do that, I guess we want to make a couple oral changes, too, if that's okay with you. Mr. Fuller has a few suggestions that we can incorporate into that motion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, page 1, line 19, after allows, certain recovery of, there's one other, on page 3, line 16, first whole section there, strike that and insert sections. Reinstate. Stricken or after 2422. On line 17, delete section before 216B243. And then take the language on line 16, all the new language were determined by the commissioner to be reasonable and prudent under add section after that.
Unless.
And move it after or on line 317, so it will read, by the commissioner under new sections 216B, 2422, or 216B, 243, or were determined by the commissioner to be reasonable and prudent under section 216B, 243. And that, those are clerical errors.
Senator Dahl incorporates that into his motion. All in favor of the A6 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. The amendment is adopted. Senator Dahl, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. This, again, is regarding a lot of the costs that are involved with transmission generation and some of the procedures we have in determining certificate of need and the like. And this was brought forward by the utilities. All of the utilities, I believe, are in agreement with the language of this bill. And I would like to bring forward, actually, at this point, if I could, if she's still here, Judy Fulferl, to talk a little bit about some of these the issues in the bill. I'll turn it. Would you like to speak to the different issues? Thank you. If that's okay with the chair.
That's fine. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Judy Fulferl with Xcel Energy. I'm managing director of Government and Regulatory Affairs. With this bill, the first section of the bill dealing with the transmission cost adjustment is an effort to help reconcile the transmission cost recovery that the legislature adopted several years ago when the CapEx proposal came before you and there was some streamlining and support done to help make that transmission happen, helping to reconcile the current state law with some federal changes. Where in the federal regime, we will now be getting some revenue credits for transmission we invest in here that will help lower costs for customers, but then we'll also be paying some charges for transmission done elsewhere in the region. It's a new federal regime that helps ensure that there is enough transmission in the overall region to meet all of our needs and to help support, for example, the renewable energy standard implementation. So this change here is more of a technical change, but something to help reconcile our existing law with this federal regime, just to help things all sync up. The second change is starting in on page 2, section 2, are simply some clarifications to reconcile the renewable energy standard with existing law, and then to also provide that storage facilities that may be needed to help support, for example, wind energy would also be recoverable under this piece of the statute. This piece of the statute deals with our ability to recover the costs of complying with the RES, and really the change that's proposed here is simply to allow energy storage facilities, for example, like a battery storage, to be recoverable since it's necessary to support the RES. On page 3, section 4, that is basically the same type of change, just again trying to reconcile some of the changes in this bill and provide for energy storage recovery. And then when you turn to the very last page, section 5 and subdivision 9, this piece of the bill deals with the current law, which would have us file certificate of need applications with the commission for large energy projects, including renewable energy projects, and what we've what this bill would do would actually propose somewhat of a different process, more focused on the key questions related to a utility's compliance with the renewable energy standard, as opposed to some of the things that would be addressed in a certificate of need. For example, in a certificate of need, you have to show that your customers need it, what alternatives are available to meet that need, et cetera, et cetera. A number of those questions were addressed by the renewable energy standard last year. We know how much renewable energy we need to add. We know the alternatives are far fewer. They're just simply other renewable resources. So what this is attempting to do is to put a different process in front of the commission that's more focused on the question of, if it's a renewable project, is the utility doing the most effective renewable project? Does it look like it will help satisfy the RES? So overall, and from the perspective of Xcel Energy, we support the bill. We see it as being able to facilitate and reconcile, you know, the existing law and the existing regulatory structures with some changes that have happened, should help facilitate our ability to bring renewables and transmission to market.
Senator Dahl.
Madam Chair, I also like to bring, if he's still here, Mr. Lautog forward to testify on behalf of this bill as well.
Mr. Lautog.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. I am Lauren Lautog of Otter Tail Power Company, and I just want to extend my company's support for Senate File 3758 as amended by Senator Dahl. Thank you.
So, okay. And is there anybody else that wants to speak for or against the bill? Any discussion by committee members? Senator
Well, then, Chair, I move that Senate File 3758, as amended, be recommended to pass and referred to the floor.
The floor, I believe, right? The floor. On Senator Dahl's motion, is there any discussion? All those in favor, please signify by stating aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members.
That bring us to the end of our... Okay. That does bring us to the end of our agenda. We have heard all the bills that can be heard prior to the second deadline now. And I don't believe that we will meet next week. But we still have some commissioners that need to that we need to review and approve and move on. And we may be getting some reports coming to the committee, but that will suspend our meetings for regular meetings for the foreseeable future anyways. So thank you. Meeting adjourned.